And she's still, it's been 2 years, she's still in the hospital. She's in bad shape, yeah.
Okay, open up the House Committee on Education for April 5th, 2017. Okay, the first thing we do is call to order, or I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3191. Alethea, if you could read a summary of what the bill is.
Yeah.
Smith Warner, Representative Smith Warner.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3191 requires the Oregon Department of Education to establish a pilot program to offer summer education to elementary school students in high-poverty, low-performing schools and those with significant populations of English language learners. It establishes an application component to include designating a community organization for partnership with the district, the number of students impacted, and the program cost, and it establishes requirements for the Department of Education to approve the proposed program. It does appropriate money from the general fund into the summer learning fund to pay for the pilot, and it goes into effect upon passage with an emergency declared to exist. There is a dash one amendment which changes the appropriation value to a blank dollar amount from the general fund, and for the biennium beginning July 1st, 2017. Fiscal statement has been issued as a fiscal light, and there's a revenue impact statement of no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you so much, all of you, for having me. Nice to see you all. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I have the honor to represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I come today before this committee on behalf of House Bill 3191, the Summer Learning Pilot Program from the Summer Learning Work Group that I chaired during the interim, thanks under the auspices of the House Education Committee. So thanks again to Chair Doherty for giving us your, for kind of allowing us to put that together. So summer slide is really what I am here to kind of talk a little bit about. Everybody's heard the expression. It's pretty well documented. I've talked about it. I know you guys have heard about it from lots of different folks. But it bears repeating that students lose 2 to 3 months of learning every school year, and our most disadvantaged students fall further and further behind their peers as this summer slide is compounded over the years. I remember one of the things that has stuck in my mind from when I first started learning about this is the idea that if you look at how kids, that achievement gap between low-income, historically disadvantaged kids, that doesn't come from their learning. They all learn at the same rates over the course of a year. They're in the same classrooms, they have all these resources, they're with the same teachers. That's not the issue. They're learning at the same rates. It is that summertime when middle-income and other kids either stay the same or increase because of the opportunities that they have, and these other low-income disadvantaged kids decrease because they are not exposed to the same things that their middle and high-income peers are. There's Matthew Boulay from the National Summer Learning Academy Institute, I can never remember that last letter. I apologize, Matthew, although you're not here, talks about it as a faucet of resources, that during the school year, there are all these resources that are turned on and available to these kids kind of across the spectrum. And in the summer, that faucet is turned off. They lose access to books, to meals, to health services, to enrichment and academic support services. It's a huge impact. We tell kids that the most important thing they do is their education, but we're only going to provide it for you 3/4 of the year. Oh, those other 3 months, you're on your own. And those of us here have these, too many, I think, lawmakers and other folks have this idyllic version of summers and what summers are, because we think about them as a time when kids are free to lay under trees and look up at clouds and build forts and go to summer camp. But there are so many kids that this is just not a reality for them anymore. Maybe their parents are working multiple jobs, can't afford to send them to a camp. They may be providing childcare for their younger siblings. They may be that younger sibling. They're, best case, they're watching a lot of TV and playing video games. And we are, so they're really not getting these opportunities. So we put together this work group that met 4 times over the course of last year between May and September. I actually just confirmed that with my staff because it felt like a lot more, because we would have these long, really thorough conversations and discussions. with a whole wide variety of participants, some of whom you'll hear from today, or you can read written testimony in a number of organizations. This is one of those weeks where a lot of people are out of town, and so we're not able to be here, but they did submit some testimony. We had a variety of legislators, both from the House and the Senate, from Democrats and Republicans. We had a variety of providers of summer learning opportunities. We had folks from migrant education. We had people from the state library, people from local libraries, all sorts of the Oregon Department of Education, all sorts of representation. And we really spent a lot of time discussing the elements of successful summer learning programs and how we can kind of use that to combat summer slide. So the work group has put together, thanks to the amazing work of Oregon Ask, has put together a recommendation or a report that you will also find on OLIS. It's called Smart Summers, and it's a report on that problem of summer slide and some of the recommendations of our work group. Our recommendations, as I said, it's on OLIS, and our recommendations are on page 18. First, the benefits of summer learning take time to accrue, so any support that the state would need to offer at least 2 years of programming support. Second, the application process needs to be simple. Many of the communities that need the most support for summer learning, those districts lack grant writers. We talked a lot about the state library's ready-to-read grant application process, where it's basically you just qualify, and all you have to do is qualify, and you get it. It's the kind of model we're looking at to make this as easy and as seamless as possible. Third, creative partnerships are really a key component of summer learning. Schools are indeed essential partners in this process, but each community has unique partners with an established presence and existing community trust. And that's really what we want to tap into if we want to not do this as a cookie cutter, but allow each community to work with their local organizations to do this in the best possible way. Fourth, summer learning has to involve food. Food is so critical to learning. You can't focus on learning when all you can think about is how hungry you are or when your next meal is going to come. And too many of our students don't have enough access to nutrition in the summer. So it's not only going to help the kids learn, but it's going to be a big draw in getting those kids to the program. And fifth and finally, there's a need for more. We discovered that there's a need for more uniform reporting systems and more established requirements and funding sources. We did a pilot back in 2014 with some summer learning, and it lacked. This is a nice way to put it. It lacked a uniform report back. If you have had the opportunity to see the evaluations we got back after that, it is almost comical how different they were. Some literally just listed the number of kids who came, and others talked about what a great time everybody had, and others actually gave some thorough details about here's what we did, here's some analysis of our results. Because we didn't, I think, put down the parameters very very specifically, we indeed had a quite wide range of response. And while we do not want to be solely focused on specific outcomes, we do need to understand what works for summer learning and know what already exists out there. So, House Bill 3191. Encompasses the recommendations of the Smart Summers Report. It establishes a pilot program, as Alethea mentioned in the summary, administered by the Department of Education, with funding administered through a new fund in the state library in the same manner that they administer the ready-to-read grants. Now, we're not talking about taking ready-to-read money for this. I want to be very clear about that. We're simply using their model and knowledge of how to best administer these in the most efficient, least clunky way. The program application would be simple, and a school district applying must have a community partner in order to do the program. So that both it guarantees that both you have the grounding in the school and the grounding in the community of organizations that are already doing these programs. The summer learning program must provide food to the students, it must have qualified staff, and it must provide at least 5 weeks of instruction. A portion of the money may be used for transportation, because this is another huge element that was brought up in our conversation, is that such a barrier often. So we don't want to limit it so that it can only be used for the program. We have to understand the full, in order to really make this work, you need to allow for that transportation. And at the conclusion, the school districts will submit their evaluation to the Department of Education to give more uniform information on the types of program, number of students served, and the overall summer learning experience. We talked a lot in this group about not just about the idea that a lot of the summer learning is going to help you in your soft skills as well. And we didn't want it to be tied to yet another, okay, do they have to know this many letters when they come in and this many letters when they come out? That was not, we talked a lot about not wanting to get too wrapped up in that kind of, you know, back to the old testing conundrum. But the idea of having a range of report backs, Senator Roblin, who attended a couple of the meetings, suggested the idea of looking afterwards at attendance and how the kids' attendance changed after going, you know, how they were the year before versus having gone through the summer as an engagement mechanism, as a way to kind of measure how that worked. So you have the bill before you. As the co-chair of the Subcommittee on Education of Ways and Means, I know as well as anybody how dire our current education budget looks. And initially, I was not even going to do anything about this at all because I was so discouraged about our budget situation. But really, I want to continue the conversation on summer learning and see what progress we can make on this. This really is the next, I believe this is the next big place for education to go to, both in Oregon and in the country, if we are to deal with all of the things that we say we want to focus on, which is 21st century learning, you know, teaching kids for the economy of tomorrow, and dealing with that achievement gap that we have. This is really the next big way to get there. So I think it's important to do this. I don't know if we're going to get any funding for this. I don't think any of us know. But I'd rather have it there and die there than have something come up and not have the ability to utilize this. So the Dash One Amendment has a blank dollar amount. I am asking you to move this to Ways and Means today and help so that we can start taking some of these very important steps to invest in our students all year long.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Thank you.
I do want to make one thing. We've got 10 minutes. We've got 8 people speaking. So keep your questions either very short or non-existent. Any questions? How was that for being Southern? Thank you for so much, and thank you for so much for your work on this bill. It's been a long time coming.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next, we've got 8 folks. I'm going to time you guys. We've got Bethany Thrainer, Richard Donovan, and Kelsey Wilson. And it might be just helpful to just say we support the bill, we don't support the bill, and why.
Okay. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Bethany Tramer. I am Policy and Outreach Coordinator for Oregon Ask Expanded Learning Partnership, and we are here in support of summer learning. Okay. Did you want me to continue or next?
Just in a couple of sentences, why?
Okay. Well, we were honored to be a part of the committee, and Oregon Ask, for those of you who don't know, we've been working for 12 years as a partnership to advocate for and with after-school programs and summer learning experiences. We know the importance of having access and the opportunity, and we believe that summer learning is critical for Oregon youth, particularly for low-income youth who suffer for not having access.
Thank you so much. Kelsey?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. Kelsey Wilson here on behalf of the Oregon Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. And I do have an executive director and a couple teens coming. They were waiting for the teens to get done with school and get to the club, so hopefully they'll get here in time. But the Alliance supports House Bill 3191. You have my written testimony along with testimony from a couple executive directors from around the state, Chris Latimer from the Santa Yam Clubs, Aaron Hubert from the Portland and Multnomah County Club, and then hopefully Sue Bloom and a couple of her teens will make it as soon as they can. So ensuring meaningful education for every child has never been more critical than it is today. I want to point to in Aaron Hubert's testimony that we started the Summer Brain Gain program in the Boys and Girls Clubs of Multnomah County about 3 years ago. And in that first summer, participating youth began the summer, and they found that there was no learning loss, and in fact, actual 2% learning gain. After some tweaks to the curriculum, this last year, the third year that the program was in place, they saw an average of 10% learning gain in the Summer Brain Game program. So, with that, I will.
Thank you.
There's the teens. They'll be here shortly, and you'll hear from them. Okay,
thank you very much, Richard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Donovan on behalf of OSBA. The worker process was very thorough. It was excellently done. The summer slide is real. This bill is good policy. Do pass.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, the next panel we have is Sue Bloom and Joel Fisher. Start doing that. Same sort of criteria.
Which is, I apologize for being
because
late.
I think that Representative Smith-Warner did a great job explaining what the program is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher. On behalf of Oregon Business Association and Associated Oregon Industries, good bill should pass.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Sue Bloom. I'm the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club of Salem, Marion, and Polk Counties. Academic enrichment is a core program priority for the Boys and Girls Club programming, particularly in the summer months, with a focus on summer brain gain to address our at-risk youth and the threat of losing that learning momentum during the summer months. One such summer program, which I hope some of our kids will be able to share with you, is a food truck challenge. So think Shark Tank for middle schoolers. Teens and middle schoolers were challenged with building a food truck business plan with a $50,000 worth of seed money. We provided them the framework and the resources and a trip to some food carts to see them in action. But then they truly took that plan, started to create their vision and build a plan, including building a prototype of their trucks about this big down to the tip jar on the counter with a little bit of seed cash in it.
Big tip jar.
No. Big tip, yeah. Presentation components for these teens included startup and ongoing costs, a repayment timeline for that $50,000 loan, as well as revenue projections, their food plan, including all the items on their menu and price components, and then the marketing and promotion. So while the big strawberry won the challenge, these are some of the takeaways from our kids. They created something as a team. They got to be creative and build on each other's ideas and skills. They became better problem solvers. They got better at thinking on their feet to answer questions, and they built something from a big idea to a real business. Math and communication were key learning components, as well as the project provided our youth with the opportunity to collaborate and really truly build those 21st century skill sets as a team and as members of a larger community. Funding in support of the Summer Brain Game programs is critical for our youth across our state. They're our future, they're our promise for tomorrow, they're our future leaders, they're the engine and innovation of our economy and communities, and we appreciate your consideration of support.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we had Kyler Breton, Noah Hawkins, and Marianne Dahlgren.
Oh, no, I am not going up there with these kids.
No.
You sit here, Noah.
Right. Trust me, they'll make you look bad.
They will make me look horrible.
Okay. And I know we're really short on time, so just really briefly tell us why the program's good and why we should have it in the summertime to convince all of these people up here to vote for it. And you need to identify yourself for the record, too. Okay. Want to start?
Okay. My name is Kyler. Good afternoon. My name is Kyler Breton, a junior at North Salem High School. I have been attending the Boys and Girls Club since I was in seventh grade. Since seventh grade, you can find me at the club and join my summer vacation where I come every day to relax and socialize with other members and help staff. I really enjoy to play the piano and love entertaining members with my music. I come to the club every day because I have fun when I learn. The club makes me feel safe and very welcome every time I come. I really enjoyed the summers that I have come. Like two summers ago, the club, because of this club, I was able to visit four colleges and was able to learn about opportunities beyond high school. And last summer, we did a visit at Oregon Institute of Technology. And not only did we visit there, we actually stayed the night there. And you got to experience college dorm life. And later this month, I'm going to make my sixth visit at OSU. And not only do they give college visits, but they provide volunteer experience and work experience.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say about what you're doing this summer? Or?
I actually had, last summer, I actually worked part-time during the summer as a Oregon Youth Corps, with the Oregon Youth Conversation Corps as a crew member. Removing invasive species and focusing on beautifying our local parks and crop plantation, to name a few. The experience was fun and unique. And where you'll find me this summer is at the club again, as an intern, working this as my with my second job, working with members through from first through fifth graders. And this wouldn't have been possible without the funds of. This wouldn't have been possible without the funds to continue with the summer programming.
Now I'm going to have, and you're Noah, so what don't you do? And we'll turn the microphone a little bit towards you, and then just tell us about the program. That's
all right.
Perfect.
You
don't have to get too close about this part.
All right. Hi, my name is Noah Hawkins. I'm 12, and I'm in sixth grade. Today I'm going to talk about my Great Bright Project BGS Simulator. It's kind of an app based on the Boys and Girls Club, and you can pretty much do anything that you do in the Boys and Girls Club in the app. So yeah, and in the app you could for example, you could play do a lot of stuff. You could play bumper pool, you could play foosball, and most importantly, basketball. Ball's life. All right. And usually when I the app has a lot of things to it. You can do more than just do those things. You could actually play with real people. You could most of the people in the club, you could actually choose them as a character too. And you can do a lot of stuff. And I actually work with a team of my Skype friends, and we actually do a lot of editing and stuff. So mm-hmm. we could do Blender, which is an editing software, and sometimes I actually make kind of games and stuff like that, and post YouTube videos. So yeah, that's kind of my boys my BGS simulator. It's gonna be a game based off of that. And it's coming together.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much.
Okay. Chair Doherty.
It's a hard act to follow.
I know, it's a horrible act to follow. You guys did great.
That means you guys did a good job.
That's what that means. Chair Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Mary Kay Dahlgreen. I'm the state librarian. We were involved in the discussions with Representative Smith Warner and the other partners. While we are neutral on the bill, we are very much in support of summer learning, and I wanted to be available to answer any questions anybody might have.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Now we have another gentleman. Would he like to speak?
Yes, he would.
Okay, and we just need to know what his name is. And then...
Hello, my name is Isaiah Ochoa, and I'm in eighth grade. Okay,
and move the mic just a little bit down so we can hear you. A little close. Yeah, there we go.
Hello, my name is Isaiah Ochoa, and I'm in eighth grade, and I have been in Great Bay for 2 years. Some of the fun things I did in Great Bay is take a beautiful field trip to the lake house. During the summer, I create and design food trucks and learn how to run a business. I think Great Bay is it's good for me because it helps me with school.
Cool. Very good. Okay, okay, we appreciate you, because summer learning is very, very important. Now, those are the last folks that we have signed up for House Bill 3191. Do we have anyone else who wants to speak on it? Okay. So with that, but what we're going to be doing today before I close this is that there are a lot of these bills that are going to Ways and Means, and so we're dealing with the policy, and when the policy is good, and then we'll refer it to Ways and Means. So that's what I wanted to tell you.
Clarifying question.
Madam Chair, yeah. Just really quickly, I was curious when talking about the state library and the connections with this program, I was kind of concerned about some of the rural districts. Like we had heard, like Douglas County, that was closing all of their libraries. Is this
well? The only one's Douglas County, and we're helping Josephine. Yeah, that is an issue, but that's a local issue that the county that they work with. But I know that, I don't know if you want to talk about the state library and what they do with the rural areas, but I just know what they do with the metro.
I can certainly send you some information on what they do.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3191 and open up a work session on House Bill 3191.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendments.
Okay, Rep. Hernandez moves to adopt the -1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the -1 amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3191 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3191 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Matt, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. With that, the motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. And thank you very much for testifying. You guys did a great job. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3191 and I open up a public hearing on House Bill 3156. Lethea, if you could read the summary.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3156 requires the Oregon Department of Education to be responsible for providing students education for the first 30 calendar days after an eligible day treatment program or eligible residential day treatment program begins or expands operation to a different school district. It requires the Department of Education pay school district for any cost incurred by the treatment programs imposed on the school district, and it establishes when ODE is required to pay school districts for cost incurred by treatment programs, including if the cost incurred were during the first year of establishment and related to the district beginning to provide education to the students. The revenue impact has been issued. It's a revenue light, and the fiscal impact has been issued as a fiscal light.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have Representative Post, Representative Noble, and would the Superintendent of Newburgh like to join them? Thank you.
Well, howdy. Nice to see everybody. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Post, State Representative from House District 25, representing Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. HB 3156 is brought to you today by one of my school districts, one of the three districts, the Newburgh School District, and Superintendent Dr. Kim LeBlanc Esparza, who brought this to my attention last year, and we've been working on the concept ever since. And so with that, I'm going to let her explain what this is all about.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to speak with you this afternoon. As I talked with both of our gentlemen who...
Could I identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please?
I'm Kim LeBlanc Esparza. I'm the superintendent of the Newburgh School District. Thank you for letting me speak to you today. In June of 2015, we received communication from the WESD, Willamette ESD, that the contract that they had been fulfilling with our school district serving group homes that lived in our area, that they no longer had an interest in serving that contract, and that the school district was going to need to pick that up. And in going through that process, this was June, and that meant that in September we were going to have to open a facility, hire staff, and serve the 30 to 50 students that were served by Shehalem Youth and Family Services that lived in group homes within our community. We worked at putting all of that together. Obviously, it took a considerable amount of time, but we did it, and we got it up and going. We hired staff. We trained that staff because those are homes that typically serve students who have been through a multitude of situations, whether that's foster care, whether that's group homes, whether that's incarceration. These are students that have some significant at-risk factors in their life. They are now under the care of Shehalem Youth and Family Services. And in beginning to partner with those folks, we had to obtain a facility, hire staff, which it takes roughly one adult to every one student, sometimes even two, depending on the needs of the student. Every one of those students is on an IEP. Every one of those students gets served with those wraparound services. And we went through the process of making the transition. In going through that process and making the transition, we began to partner also with our law enforcement agencies because they contacted us, letting us know the amount of time that they were spending at the facility that currently existed that WESD had operated. We also began to partner and have conversation with our city councilors, sorry, I lost the word there for a moment, our city councilors, with our mayor, with a number of the folks that are involved in our community. Anyway, long story short, we came together as soon as we opened our doors and recognized that, first of all, having already been through the budgeting process for a school district, just getting the program started and taking it over was an incurrence of cost of a little over $800,000 for the school district, with no real notice of the fact that we needed to do this. We had a responsibility, and we knew that. That was, you know, in terms of what's in the statute, we knew we had a responsibility to serve the students because they were part of our community. No one ever questioned that. That was something that we felt really responsible for and felt committed to. The issue was the timing and the fact that in order to do that with the way that the statute was currently written, the school district was just going to have to figure out a way. We did. We got it up and running. We got it going. We started serving students. We began meeting their needs, and we began building relationships with kids. Very quickly, we began to realize something wasn't quite right. The stories that kids were sharing with us, the experiences they were having in their homes, the way in which they were interacting with each other, there were some very unhealthy things going on. So we brought together our police. We brought together our city elected officials. We brought together the county juvenile folks. We brought together DHS and began to have conversations. Thus, you may have remembered reading in the paper in the Oregonian when CYFS began to have some struggles and Department of Human Services began to investigate and find out what's going on. Long story short, as I speed ahead, they froze the group homes and in terms of their ability to take in more kids. We continue to serve those students. At the end of the year, come about May, DHS came back to us and said, we're not going to operate that anymore. We're not going to operate those homes. We're going to stop serving kids. We have determined that it is not meeting the needs of kids in the way that is in alignment with what DHS expects of group homes. So we're going to shut them down. So now we've incurred a cost of over $800,000 to start it up. We operated for less than a year, and now we've signed a lease on a building. We've hired staff. We've trained staff extensively, and they're going to shut it down. And we have commitments long-term over a year's period of time to continue to do the work for a program that's now not going to exist in our community because it's going to get shut down. My concern is simply from a standpoint of having walked through this experience as a school district, it can happen to any school district in the state of Oregon. And the reality of that is that in the statute, we have a responsibility, and that as it should be, to serve kids who live in our communities. The challenge is that there are not resources set aside to say, we're going to start up a group home in your community. School district, you now have to build a plan and launch that plan for serving those kids. And if and when it gets shut down and there's ongoing costs such as teacher contracts, such as leases for buildings, commitments to
you know, to pay for services that serve those students now continue to be a responsibility of the school district. And you've got a situation where, facing your community, we now have less per pupil to provide to students in our community because we committed to serving a population and serving a program that now won't exist in our community. And really, it feels a little odd, but the truth of the matter is we had some responsibility in that because we began the conversation around this is not quite right. It's not serving kids well. We see some things happening to kids that, frankly, are not okay. And in beginning to talk about that, it precipitated the closing of some of that. So we had responsibility on both ends, and yet at the same time, I'm here to say the way that the statute is currently written, it works against school districts, and I don't want to take the responsibility away from school districts to serve students in group homes that come in, but I do want to recognize that there's a cost that has to be incurred within that, and in doing such, this is a really fluid kind of a program. And so in looking at some of the background that ODE has provided, yes, there are group homes and there are classrooms that serve these homes that start up and close down more regularly than what would happen in a regular neighborhood school cycle. And to plan for that is very problematic. And so I think my goal in this is to raise awareness. My goal in this is to help you understand that this could happen to any school district in Oregon, and it typically happens after budgets have already been planned, and so therefore folks have to carve out resources in order to serve those students. And so that's the concern, is to kind of take a look at how might we do this differently where we can plan for it adequately and serve kids and still be responsible for serving kids.
Okay. Representative Noble, did you want to add anything? Or?
Just briefly, thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. I'm Ron Noble, State Representative for District 24, which includes part of the Newburgh School District. I had in my mind a very short but appropriate comment. I think in light of my ability to, in my enjoyment in being here last week to talk about school funding issues, timing of funding, and what that does to school budgets, I think I'll just go with the end result of all this in having an expectation placed on you and yanked out. The result is we have fewer dollars in our schools to teach the kids, and I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. Since this is a little complicated issue, I'm going to open it up for questions. You guys have any questions to the panel? And I think my one question and observation is basically what this was a program run by the ESD that you were depending on, and then the ESD no longer committed to the program.
Correct. The school districts always have the ultimate responsibility for serving any students in their community. It is not uncommon for school districts to contract with ESDs to serve these programs. But in this case, as in many, the ESD came to us and very frankly said, we can't support it. We can't sustain it. We are taxing the local law enforcement. It is really stressing our relationship with them. And frankly, we can't guarantee the safety of our staff, and therefore we can't maintain staff. So we're not going to serve that contract anymore. You need to. And we have that responsibility. So we understand that, and that's part of the dynamic that operate, you know, that is in the statute. But the issue is, A, we weren't shying away from our responsibility, but we need to be able to do it adequately. My special programs director and I have pretty extensive backgrounds in dealing with these kind of programs, and frankly felt pretty good about the fact that we knew how to do it and could do it. Our challenge was, in order to do it, you have to be able to plan for it adequately, you have to get the right staff, and it takes resources to do it. And doing that after you've planned a budget, I know you guys have heard, broken record, we've said what it takes to adequately fund schools in Oregon. This takes away from that. This makes it even harder to do that.
Okay. And so I guess the other question, so is the cost shift going to the Department of Education permanently or just until a certain time period has gone by, or or what?
The recommendation that we were making was to look at startup and or ending, yeah, and looking at it from a standpoint of if something started up after a budget year got going, that's what was problematic about it, or if it shut down without adequate notice where there was already contracts for people that were already committed to. I mean, when it shut down, we were still left with contracts for people that we had to, some folks we could reassign, some folks we couldn't, and we were left, you know, we had to employ those folks. So the proposal was simply to say start up and or close down. If a school district doesn't have the time frame necessary to budget for it, can there be a fund available that can help a school district take this on? Because it won't just be the Newburgh School District. There will be other school districts that are going to face the same issue.
Okay. Do we have any other questions of this panel? Because we do have some questions of ODE.
I have one thing I wanted to add, if it's okay, Madam Chair. And you'll hear from ODE, I'm sure, in just a moment. There was some question about how much. Received an email from ODE staff the other day that said they thought they would be around $2.8 million per biennium to fund the LTCT expenses in instances when a facility opens, expands, or closes. The funds for this contingency fund will reduce the total amount available to LTCT programs to provide educational services to students. Therefore, current LTCT sites will have fewer funds allocated during the biennium. I sent that email over to Dr. LeBlanc Esparza, and basically she said to me, yeah, I absolutely know this because we've lived through this. Her thinking was somewhere along, and correct me if I'm wrong, $850,000. Of course, that figure is startup costs with an entire center between 30 and 50 students, facilities, staffing, materials, and equipment, et cetera, about $850,000. So I'm not sure about the 2.8, so I'll be interested to hear where that comes from, because that seems excessive.
Well, this is
going
to go to Ways and Means, so that's where that process
right,
is.
Right, right.
We don't do that here. We do that in Ways and Means.
So I just wanted to throw that out. It seems a little bit higher than what I would think from our experience. But what I wanted to leave the thought, and Kim has already said this, but I think it's important, this bill will not fix Newburgh's situation. It's too late. But it would fix another Newburgh situation from happening, and it will happen. It's just a matter of time. It will happen again. So that's why it was important that when she came to me with this, my first thought was, well, this won't fix you. Mm-hmm. And she said, that's okay. I want it to help other people. And so that was what attracted me to what she had to say.
Okay, thank you. You have some questions of ODE? Could ODE,
sure.
Thank you very much. Just ODE, just in case we have any questions or clarifications on anything with this, because I say we did just get a letter from the speaker to have it moved to Ways and Means.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members
Thank
of the
you.
Committee. My name is Emily Nazarov. I'm a legislative coordinator with ODE, and I've brought one of my colleagues, Sam Coe.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty. My name is Sam Coe. I'm the education specialist at Oregon Department of Ed for long-term care treatment, juvenile detention education program, and youth corrections education program.
Okay. So, any questions? Representative Wilson.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. I'd just like to know your thoughts about the concept here. Either one or both, please.
Well, Chair Doherty, Representative Wilson, ODE is neutral on the bill. So we can provide information about the way it works currently and what we think would happen under if the bill passes. What Representative Post said is correct. We have identified a pretty large fiscal impact to the long-term care and treatment funds, because we would create a contingency reserve, and so we've submitted that information through the Legislative Fiscal Office. But if you have a specific question.
Well, not necessarily specific, but I am just interested to know if on face this process seems workable.
Representative Chair Doherty and Representative Wilson, it is workable, but as our analysis says, it's unpredictable about how many sites will close and how many sites will open. And then our analysis of the $2.1 million is per biennium, so like $1 million per year, which is in line with Newburgh's estimate. And then And the sites will open or close independent of education. That decision is made by DHS or the mental health providers. So it's a lot of times it's where the school districts and ODE are reactionary. It's like we have no, as the Newburgh superintendent said, it's their decision and so forth. So we would have to have a large contingency fund in place. And then while we have that fund in place, that fund will not be available to the classrooms and to the educational sites to be utilized during that biennium. And unfortunately, the bill does not allocate additional funds. It does not state where the funds would come from. So for us to have a set-aside fund for that, we would have to take the funds from the existing allocations to the sites now. And $2 million, you know, is a considerable amount when the state general fund is $18 million.
Okay, thank you.
Just one final quick one. Thanks for that. I do appreciate that. has this happened before Newburgh? Is the situation with Newburgh the first time we've heard this happening?
Chair Doherty and Representative Wilson, it has happened in the past, but other school districts and other ESDs and us, we've been able to work things out. In Newburgh's situation, as they said, it's unique where it was not a long-term partnership with the mental health provider. It's something that they took on, and so then they were new. And unfortunately, their lease for the building was for 3 years, and they just completed just 1 year. Mm. At other sites, the educational programs are at a school or at the mental health facility, such as Children's Farm Home or St. Mary's. It happens at the facility, not so. Then what Newburgh School District did, which perfectly made sense, they rented an old, I think, YWCA building, and then they were stuck in a 3-year lease. So that's why. But other sites have closed and opened during the school year or later, and we're able to work things out. And then the large one was Youth Villages that closed in December of 2016, I believe. And then that was able to, it was not an issue. Okay. But then it was an issue with Newburgh School District.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Representative McLean.
I was just going to ask, you made an estimate of how much would be there. So it was that estimate built on how many schools you've served in the past?
Chair Doherty and Representative McLean, the estimate was built on, it costs us an average of $200,000 per classroom, and then we estimated perhaps 5 classrooms and so forth, and then plus with the procurement, the legal costs and so forth.
Any other follow-ups?
Just
Representative Rodriguez, or Fernandez.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, for changing my name. It's all good. Just a technical question on the bill. So I'm reading the language, and earlier in the comments from the superintendent from Newburgh mentioned kind of the circumstances of ESD not providing the resources of the actual program, and then them having to cover the cost. Under this bill, is it specifically set up those parameters so that in those situations, only particular school districts that are in those situations would qualify? Or could, for example, a big school district like PPS or Reynolds be able to qualify if they had contracts currently similar to what this covers?
Chair Doherty and Representative Hernandez, as the bill is written, it would only be the current long-term care and treatment sites. And Portland Public Schools currently does have contracts with us, but then Reynolds School Districts do not. And in Newburgh's case, it was where Willamette ESD chose not to continue that contract to provide the educational services, and as the superintendent from Newburgh said, then that responsibility fell on Newburgh. And then ODE and Newburgh, we approached other school districts and other ESDs if they were interested, and there was no other takers.
Follow-up question. Contract.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. So could my school district, I serve on the Reynolds School Board. Could my school district say, hey, we can save you know, $150,000 if we have ODE cover this instead of us.
Okay, so Chair Doherty and Representative Fernandez, now that I know you're with Reynolds School District, there is a long-term care and treatment facility in Reynolds School District. It's Win Watts, run by Albertino Kerr. In that instance, Reynolds School District has asked Multnomah ESC to be the educational providers of that contract. So if Multnomah ESC were to choose no longer to be the education provider for Win Watts School at the Albertino Kerr, then Reynolds School District would be the education provider if we couldn't find another partner.
So does this... Sorry, follow up. So does this bill, why wouldn't my school district just
go
directly to that contract rather than through MESD and then get the ODE to cover the costs? I'm just trying to figure out if there's a loophole in the language. Does that make sense?
No. I think what the question is could a school district go through and say, I don't want to pay for this program, so I'm going to go through this and this, and then have ODE do it by the language. Is that pretty much what the...
Representative Doherty, Representative Hernandez, I mean, so just based on our reading of the bill, I think it's limited to when the facility closes.
Or opens.
Right. Or opens. So it's not that a district could just decide... We're done serving this. As the responsible district, you are the responsible district and have to provide the service.
In certain circumstances where this
Correct.
Would kick in. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
That was the last that we had with this. I don't know. I think we'll hold off on this for a little bit before we move on, because this is going out of Ways and Means, not the floor. So with that, I close the work session on House Bill 5156. 3156.
Yeah.
Yes. And I open up a work session on a public hearing. I'm sorry. The other one I just closed a public hearing. And now I'm going to open up a public hearing on 3267.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3267 allows the school districts or public charter schools to waive requirements that are set by the State Board of Education for children in foster care who are homeless or runaways. It goes into effect toward high school diplomas that are awarded after the act becomes law. There is an amendment. The amendment defines foster child, homeless, and runaway as defined by the State Board of Education. It clarifies the requirements can be waived for children in grades 9 through 12. It allows the school district to accept credits toward requirements set by rule of the State Board of Education if the credits satisfy the school district or charter school. For the Dash 1 amendment, we do have a revenue impact statement, but there is no fiscal impact at this time.
Okay, thank you. Representatives.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janelle Bynum, and I represent House District 51. Which is the communities of East Portland, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, and Happy Valley. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House Bill 3267 today. As one of the chief sponsors of the bill, I'd like to tell you a little bit about why I'm here. And I have to tell you, this is truly the highlight of my day. I'm very excited about what we're about to do here, because I know you're going to be on board. I dipped my toe into public service while advocating on behalf of students and our larger public education system. And that advocacy has snowballed into another full-time day job. And as an employer, I recognize that the symbiotic relationship between the business community and our education system has been made extremely clear. So in light of my new role as a state representative, coupled with our state's budget crisis, I wanted to do something significant with low to zero cost to specifically address high school graduation rates. For a little bit of background, the Oregon Department of Education reports that homelessness among Oregon students grew by 9% in 2015. The data also show that foster and transient youth are more likely than their peers to experience a host of barriers that lead to troubling outcomes, including low academic achievement and much lower matriculation rates.
The U.S. Department of Education indicates that children in foster care often face steep challenges to school success, including high rates of mobility or moving schools. When students move to a new school through no choice of their own, many of the credits they've already earned often do not transfer, or the new school has additional requirements for graduation beyond the state-mandated 24 credit hours. Community service hours are often needed to help fulfill diploma requirements that traditional students are able to complete over their four-year high school career. But this is extremely difficult for students who experience high rates of mobility. So down to the nuts and bolts. House Bill 3267 is simple, as is its purpose. Oregon students who fall under the homeless, foster, or runaway classification will have one less barrier to contend with to finish high school on time with their peers. We want to prevent these students from simply giving up. The bill directs school districts and public charter schools to waive high school diploma requirements that are not established by state law if a student is in foster care, homeless, or a runaway youth. Now, I do want to acknowledge that we missed two categories, which I think should be considered, and perhaps maybe on the Senate side, which is military families and incarcerated youth, but that can be a different conversation. The bill doesn't diminish our standard of excellence for these students. It merely provides a more level playing field for those facing additional barriers or burdens. Students will still be required to meet the 24-hour credit hour requirement by state law. This number will simply be capped regardless of the student's school district at the time of graduation. And then two final things. The students will still be required to take the requisite subject classes, but their earned subject credits will now transfer smoothly to the new school. So, for example, if money management counted as math in one school district, it will also count as the math credit in the new school district. So finally, entering adult life without a high school diploma, I think we all agree, is no way to start out. And our students' lifetime earnings are drastically affected, and it can be impossible to ever catch up. So let's get out of these students' way and help them live up to their full potential. So I'll turn it over to Rep. Vile.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm really tickled to be here with Representative Bynum and continue our cross-party freshman kumbaya. This has been a lot of fun. And I will tell you, though, in all seriousness, that when I saw this bill, I was very excited, and I'm grateful that Representative Bynum has given me the opportunity to co-sponsor this with her. This comes from personal experience, and it's a bit emotional for me because we took a lot of kids in over the years, my wife and I did. In case you haven't heard yet, I'm married to a saint, and she has really been amazing in managing kids who come from busted homes. As you may know, we have a number of Vietnamese refugee kids that we took in over the years. We've adopted some. We fostered a lot more. Many of these children came, and when we got them into the school system, they were having a lot of difficulty getting things to transfer and getting their education requirements so that they could get to graduation. Because of Paula's efforts, most of them, I'm really glad to say, were able to ultimately get their high school diploma. But I can see where the provisions that are contained in this bill would have been so tremendously helpful during those years, and I'm excited about the impact that this may have on our students here in Oregon. So thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Okay, great. Any comments, questions at the panel? Okay, excellent idea.
Okay, we have some more testimony.
Yes, we have two other folks coming. We call up, I have it written down, Sky Arnold and Janet Ahrens.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee, my name is Sky Arnold. I'm here to discuss House Bill 3267, 23, the number of schools I attended kindergarten through graduation. 42, the number of times I was displaced in the 18 years, the first 18 years of my life. Difficult to place youth, unlikely to graduate, intervention required. The adults in my life not aware they talked over me instead of to me. If they had asked, I would have told them what I'll tell you. I wanted to graduate without the modified diploma that I was being pushed towards, a goal I achieved with much difficulty. I wanted to prove that although I lived in few places longer than 3 months, and some even as short as 2 weeks, I was capable of the most basic success in life, graduation. I attended 4 high schools, 2 of which were alternative schools that lacked the resources to educate a youth who was learning at grade level, testing above grade level in every area of study. My GPA was lowered as I moved because often I was moved during the term and placed in classes that I was either finished with already or not yet ready to take on, often put in classes with available seats instead of classes I actually needed. I graduated with over 26 credits total, a GPA of 2.25, and I was told that I had barely earned the diploma I was being handed. It was difficult enough completing high school, made even more so by my lack of confidence academically. Why would I believe I could graduate if I was being told I was incapable of being held to the same standards as other students and not given the resources I needed to succeed? Credits didn't transfer well due to the differences in how each school district divided terms, resulting in trimester credits being rounded down to semester standards. If I'd only had to satisfy the Oregon graduation requirements, I would not have had to repeat many of my classes written under different names and titles in separate school districts. For example, I took civics twice as a freshman, once as a sophomore, and once as a senior because civics was written under U.S. citizenship as an elective the first 3 times I completed it. House Bill 3267 would focus on fixing the problems I've presented.
Thank you very much. Janet?
Thank you. My name is Janet Ahrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. I'm very happy to be here with my legislator as chair of this committee. And also, thank you. I just want to thank you for your comments. What a tough time. I actually started out teaching at Silverton High School just down the street here and moved from a classroom into a hearing room, as you can see today. So the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs represents almost 100,000 kids, and we do everything from prevention to psychiatric residential and everything in between, and that includes lots of foster kids and lots of runaway and homeless youth. This bill is really important to us, and Representative Bynum did a fantastic job describing the bill, everything I understand about it, and everything I hoped it would do. I attached a couple of pieces of information. The most important piece of paper I want you to look at is this one, and it identifies for you, she mentioned the homeless count for kids who are trying to stay in school. That's done every year by the Department of Education, and this will show for you all the kids in each of your school districts that are connected to your legislative districts. The kids who are homeless, and also the unaccompanied minors, which is the far right column. The unaccompanied minors are often going to be runaway and homeless youth as well, who, even though they don't have some of the stability that some of the smaller kids do and are more likely to be in a high school.
Yeah. And I know we're under time crunch, so if you could just talk about, we know the background, just how this would affect, this bill, particular bill would affect foster children and others.
It's an amazing bill. I'm thrilled that it's before you today. It's going to create stability. It's going to create opportunity. The transfer credits is a wonderful, brilliant, simple compromise to be able to get kids the kind of credit that they deserve. Not having a modified bill is really, or a modified diploma is really important to these kids. They need to, it impacts their employability, it lessens their opportunities. And honestly, these are kids who have already earned their diploma just by virtue of the experiences that they've had. And the fact that they are making being in school such a big and critical priority. Modified diplomas sometimes can carry some stigma with them, and these kids don't deserve any stigma. They've earned all the credits in one way or another. We think that this is a phenomenal bill. The Alliance represents the largest contingency of any advocacy organization for runaway homeless kids in Oregon. We also treat a lot of kids in therapeutic foster care settings. And we see how often adults move them or how often they have to move to get the resources they should be getting otherwise where they're currently living. So this would be a great bill to move.
Thank you very much. Okay, any questions? You guys did a great job. Thank you much. The last two we have are Morgan Allen and Richard Donovan. And you gentlemen are always brief and to the point.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Richard Donovan on behalf of OSBA again. This bill is good policy that costs almost nothing and benefits the traditionally most underserved segment of the population, education. It's an easy win. Good bill to pass.
Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA. Every session there's a bill or two I say, I wish I would have thought of that. And this is that bill this session. So we support it and urge your passage. Thank you.
Excellent. Any questions with you gentlemen? Okay. With this one, I wish that we could move this bill, but this needs to have, we can't work it today because we do not have a fiscal impact statement. But I think we can all kind of agree that this is probably one of the better bills we've had presented to us because it's going to help a whole lot of kids. And there's a difference between the modified diploma and a regular diploma, and there's a lot of students that just don't have the time or in school long enough to do community service, which is one of the requirements at Tigard High School. So I thank both Representative Vial and Representative Bynum for bringing this to us, and we will be working on it when we get the fiscal.
And should we carry over?
Okay, and so we will carry over the work session on House Bill 3267. Thank you. And with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3267 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3185.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3185 establishes a task force on family engagement and education. It assigns a task force to evaluate methods for increasing family engagement and education for students in the K-20 education system, and it assigns an emphasis on students in culturally diverse families, low-income families, non-English speaking, and rural families, and the effective date is December 31st, 2018. I think that's actually when it expires. The amendment is the dash two. It establishes the evaluation methods for the task force by examining the existing programs in the state for increasing family engagement, examining successful programs in other states, identifying best practices for improving existing programs to increase family engagement, and identifying legislative changes to improve the existing programs, and identifying best practices for engaging parents of first-generation students. There must be a report submitted to the Legislative Assembly no later than September 15, 2018. There is a revenue impact statement issued as no revenue impact and a fiscal impact statement issued as with a fiscal.
Thank you. Hello. For the record, my name is Teresa Alonso Leon. I am the representative for House District 22. As a lifelong advocate for education, I believe that we are all responsible for educating and supporting our students. A recent report by the Chief Education Office also explains that although a focus on the student is necessarily a critical component of improving graduation outcomes, it takes a team, including parents and families, to help students navigate the education system and achieve success in creating a plan for their future. Right now, schools across Oregon are facing challenges in engaging their students, families in the education process. They experience challenges, overcome language and cultural barriers. Working families have constraints, and there's limited access for many families due to their geographic location. It is often difficult for families to engage in their children's education, but that is not because they don't want to or they don't care. They often don't have access to the information they need to support their children, or they don't understand the challenges their child faces. In my early career, I developed parent engagement programs to help them understand the value they bring to their children's academic career. Among them, I created a program when I worked for Portland Community College, where families of first-generation college students were able to attend Portland Community College. And they were able to attend a college for a day so that they could experience the day in the life of their college student. My goal then and my goal now And the goal of many other programs similar to mine is that families can better understand what their students do each day and the problems they face so that they can support and advocate for their children, whether they are in the PK-12 system or in college. The data is clear. Students who have parents or family engaged in their education, no matter their income or background, are more likely to earn higher grades and test scores and enroll in higher level programs, be promoted, pass their classes and earn credit, attend high school regularly, have better social skills, show improved behavior and adapt well to school, graduate and go on to post-secondary education. According to the National Education Association, House Bill 3185 creates a task force of education professionals, teachers, parents, and community organizations to study best practices and engaging families in the education process from kindergarten through higher education with a focus on low-income families, rural families, culturally diverse families, and families whose primary language is not English. Currently, there's a significant effort going into the process of including families in their students' education. However, this level of involvement has not yet become a reality for all families in our state. House Bill 3185 seeks to study the patchwork of family engagement efforts taking place in Oregon and nationally to discover the best practices and ways that current work can be duplicated. I am hopeful that this bill will be a first step in creating better access for our families and our education system from pre-K to college and in improving the educational outcomes of our students across Oregon. Thank you so much for your time.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, for the record, my name is Diego Hernandez, State Representative for House District 47 East Portland. My colleague, Representative Alonso León, talked about why this is important. I'll just briefly mention that one of the things that I focus on and care about is how do we close the achievement gap? How do we increase equity in our education system? How do we start to increase academic achievement, particularly amongst underrepresented communities and communities of color? One of the things that I did when I was in grad school was organize in the Reynolds School District Latino family engagement programming, particularly in Spanish, and try to figure out ways to get the parents engaged, because there was a direct correlation between getting families engaged and increases in attendance, increases in academic performance, and ultimately trying to achieve graduation rate, increase in graduation rates. So this is there's a direct correlation. Now the next step is how do we find out what programs are going to work, right? What is working out there, and what can we do as a state legislature to make sure that school districts have the tools to close this achievement gap and increase graduation rates? That's why I'm supportive of this bill. I think it's a good bill. Thank you.
Any questions? Actually, I do have kind of a comment, because this is not a bill that is just for Latino kids. Because I taught at a high school where we had three or four different languages, and this was, 35 years ago. But I think that the big issue with some of these kids is they were first generation going to college, and their parents knew nothing about what do I do, how do I prepare, how do I, whatever. And so this is an all-encompassing bill, correct?
That's correct.
That is right, Chair Doherty. That is correct. The bill really is wanting to look at all programs that exist in the state of Oregon and nationally, from PK all the way through college level, because we know that if we have parent or family engagement from preschool, elementary school, middle school, high school, and into college, they're going to know how to best navigate and advocate on behalf of their children. So, yes, this is all-encompassing.
Great.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, just to clarify, I was speaking on behalf of my own experience, but the bill does cover for low-income families, including rural families, diverse families, and families whose primary language is in English.
Great. Thank you so very much. Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much for bringing us this bill. We have next signed up Heidi Edwards, Bethany Wright Coons, and Joel Fisher. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
And again, we're going to, if you speak to the support or the whatever, the bill, because we've got lots to do in a half an hour.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and committee members, for today. My name is Heidi Edwards. I'm here on behalf of the American Federation of Teachers Oregon and Portland Community College Federation of Faculty and Academic Professionals. I'm here to speak in support of this bill. As you know, Oregon teachers and school professionals work tenaciously to improve student academic achievement, high school graduation rates, and to strengthen the pathways to college. Sadly, family engagement in education is one of the missing links that we have in this state to help our youth succeed in school and reach their highest potential. Personally, as an outreach and orientation coordinator at Portland Community College, I partner with our K-12 schools, professionals such as Bethany sitting next to me, and in two of the school districts that I've served, two very large school districts, Hillsborough and Beaverton, our student body in those school districts, 50% of them are of color, 25% of them speak a language other than English in their homes, and 35 to 40% of them are on free and reduced lunch. We want to be able to help those students and help their families participate in the educational opportunities of their students. In activities that I do with those school districts as a representative of Portland Community College, those events, those opportunities for parents, those underrepresented, those parents are grossly underrepresented in those opportunities. And so this, hopefully, this bill would address some of the needs and exploring those outcomes. If we as a state are looking to improve our graduation rates and strengthen pathways to higher education, I believe we need to explore and implement and move forward with this task force. And I hope that you also will support this House Bill 3185. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and committee members. My name is Beth Wright Coons. I'm a school counselor in Beaverton School District, and I'm here to testify on behalf of this bill. As a school counselor, I've worked as a counselor for English language learners for the past 3 years in high school. And in this role, I've had a front row seat, seeing what a difference it makes for students who have parents who know how to access the school system and students that do not. In preparation for today, I asked some of my students why they think it makes a difference for their family to be involved in their education, and these are a few of their responses. My parents don't know how much the school expects from me or how to help me. Families do not have time to read mail and do not read information that is sent home. Parents do not feel invited because they don't think any of the information applies to them. Or my parents don't speak English and never graduated from high school. They tell me that they want me to do well and they want me to work hard, but they don't know that they are allowed to ask questions or to help me. They leave everything up to me. As parents, we want the very best for our children. When you enter the American school system, you're entering a unique ecosystem of traditions that are often expected to be intuitive for students and families. These traditions can sometimes be intimidating and hard to navigate if you've not been a part of that culture. So while parents are telling their students to work hard and do their best, they may not know the expectations that their students have during the day or how to support them in going forward. So I'm just here to share my support in researching best practices to ensure that we are engaged all families in our current school system.
Okay, thank you very much.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, here on behalf of the Oregon Business Association and Associated Oregon Industries. We work to develop a world-class education system through pre-kindergarten through higher education. We believe that we have the ability to achieve our 40-40-20 goal through a robust education funding and targeted investments focused on reducing chronic absenteeism, improving our graduation rate, closing the achievement gap, and increasing equity. I'd like to applaud the tremendous work of the many teachers in the state that are doing tremendous work, and a lot of times without, as has been mentioned today, that missing link of family engagement. So we're here to support this bill and thank the drafters for bringing it forward.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of this panel? Okay, thank you so very much. These are the last ones we have signed up for House Bill 3185. And just one comment when you talk about the first generation. I'm friends with a first generation person, walked into Portland State, had absolutely no idea what he was supposed to do, where he was supposed to go. He turned around and walked out. And 30 years later, he is actually Dr. Joe Gallegos. Mm. And he is who we are addressing in something like this. He had the ability to go through and work a little harder, went to the military, got out, and became a PhD. So, and went through and taught other kids. So anyway, so with that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3185 and open up a work session on House Bill 3185.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay, Representative Wilson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 3185 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Wilson moves House Bill 3185 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referenced to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So I'm looking at the fiscal, and the fiscal impact says it's minimal because the fiscal assumes these entities will simply reprioritize their duties of existing staff and resources to allow participation on the task force. Madam Chair, we have lots of task force bills that come through here, and they don't all say that. So I'm wondering why this specific one was given that level of prioritization over other task force that we were potentially sending down or have sent down that have significant impacts.
I have no idea. Do you have any idea?
Wait, the statement you're talking about is minimal. The one I have, it's the Dash 2 for 3185. It is a fiscal impact. So by virtue of it not being minimal on the sheet, it's over $50,000 fiscal. So that's why it goes to Joint Ways and Means.
So is that Dash, is the fiscal for?
3185 Dash 2.
With the amendment, is that loaded on OLAS?
Yes, it should be.
The fiscal and impact revenues.
It would be under a different tab. It's not the analysis. It's under uploads.
I guess I'm not seeing that on my screen. So, okay, but you're saying there is a fiscal because I'm not.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to print one.
Okay, thanks.
Yes. Yeah, yes. And we can pause, Jim, if you want to review that.
We want to stand at ease for a few minutes.
Yeah. Do you have a comment?
If you want to keep...
We can keep talking. If other people have questions, I'd just like to see the fiscal.
I just wanted to put on the record my gratitude for the opportunity to support this bill as well. I really feel like this is a good idea, and I applaud your efforts on this.
Good idea, Dave.
Mm-hmm. All Teresa Alonso, though.
Well, she did a good job then.
Yeah.
Well, we have dead air here, so I suppose I should probably go ahead.
A radio guy hates
dead air. Hate dead air. Creeps me out. I would say this, although my request for a task force has not been successful in another committee, not
Thank
this
you.
Committee. I would only hope that I could see a little success on my task force request, which is so important for the people of my district. And I think it's two terms in a row I've tried to get it through, and no luck. So I'm hoping against hope that I have some good fortune.
Okay. Thank you.
Good dead air fill.
So what are we doing?
So do you guys want to take a look at it?
So I do have it now. It is $117,000 is what the fiscal actually is now.
So that's what it's going to Ways and Means.
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, Matt, would you like to call the roll?
Madam Chair, that's not how you do it. Slow talking, man.
I wanted him to
It's through an abundance of words.
To get to his post there.
All right. Representative Evans.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
I'm going to be no because of the fiscal on it. Thanks.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Joint Committee, the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. Okay, with that, we close the work session on House Bill 3185. 85 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3358. Representative Wisnett, if you want to go through and explain what it is.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3358 establishes an advisory committee to advise the Oregon Department of Education on English language learners. It establishes an advisory group membership representation and requires the advisory group ensure the implementation of the annual report on ELL and statewide plan prepared by ODE that it align with the statewide efforts. It requires the advisory group develop and regularly review best practices and establishes best practice review.
Okay, Representative Wisnett.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. And my voice will not be the same as Mr. Wilson. Vice Chairs and Honorable Committee Members, for the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, House Representative, House District, State Representative, House District 53. I'm very pleased to speak to this committee again, supporting good education policy legislation. I appreciate the Speaker Kotek asking me to join her as a sponsor of House Bill 3358, directing the Department of Education to convene an advisory group to advise the department regarding education language learning programs. Madam Chair, Dr. Representative Joe Gigas and I worked together the last Legislative Assembly on bills addressing English language learning and students from poverty families. This student population is growing and does have some adverse impact, I believe, on our absenteeism, dropout, and graduation rates. We passed two good bills, Dr. Gallegos and I did, House Bill 3499 and House Bill 4057. Also, we authorized, part of 3499, authorized $12 million to improve our English language learner programs. Creating House Bill 3358 is an action that I think we, the legislature, should do more often. It provides a necessary review and advisory role to implement the EL programs created by HB 3499. We passed a bill one session that said agencies that issued license should be sure that they recognize military experience and give those license to any military man that was qualified to do it. 2 years later, I had a bill that said, okay, agencies, how are you doing? And that's what I look at this bill as doing. So in closing, I urge the committee to pass 3358 to ensure that the success of our new efforts to improve our ELL programs. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen on behalf of COSA. And as Representative Wisnett said, House Bill 3499 was one of the best bills I've seen in my 10 years in this process. Last session, a broad group of education groups came together with a bipartisan group of legislators, community-based organizations, and nonprofits, and put together a piece of legislation that not only is great policy, but it includes training, supports, and most importantly, funding so that we could improve outcomes for our ELL students. And I was proud to be part of that. I'm here on behalf of that group of organizations today to offer our support for the bill. The Speaker's office has called a meeting together tomorrow with all of us, and we're going to work on some amendments and work with the department so we aren't doing some duplicative efforts. The department has already begun some of the work described in the bill, which we appreciate, and I think we just need to kind of dot the I's and cross the T's and make sure that we're not doing things across purposes, and everyone's committed to doing that. So we hope to be back very soon with an amendment from the Speaker's office and urge you to pass the bill forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of this esteemed panel? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, there's no one else signed up for this, so with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3358 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3216.
Chair Doherty. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3216 requires the Chief Education Office conduct a study on identifying practices that assist public school students and poverty families. It requires the Chief Education Office use the study to evaluate locally effective practices that improve achievement outcomes, identify modifications to improve practices that are evaluated, and identify sustainable funding sources. It requires that they submit a report to the Legislative Assembly no later than September 15th. 2018, declares emergency and effective July 1st, 2017. It may have a fiscal impact, but no statement has been issued, and it may have a revenue impact, but no statement has been issued at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair. vice chairs, and honorable committee members. Thank you for hearing House Bill 3216 related to students in poverty. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. As I just explained to the committee in 2015 and 2016, Representative Joe Gygas and I worked on bills to help improve the success of our English language learners and students from families in poverty. Implementation of the English Language Learners Billings 3499 policy is now going to be evaluated, I hope, when we get our amendment and comes back to this committee for a work session sponsored by Speaker Kotek and myself, in which we just presented to you. Now, House Bill 3216 takes the Chief Education Office practices to improve the achievement of students in poverty report, which was in response to the 2016 bill, House Bill 4057, that I talked about in the other presentation. The report is based upon a survey of 148 school districts, interviews, financial data generated by the poverty weight and student achievement data. As the 2016 bill requested, also promising practices were identified by school districts. Budgets, accounting, and cost controls were reviewed. Now, House Bill 3216 calls for the Chief Education Office to conduct a study for the purpose of identifying practices that assist students in poverty families and submit a report to the Legislative Assembly no later than September the 15th, 2017. Like 3358, House Bill 3216 calls for action to follow up on the 2016 bill, which I think we need to do more frequently, the legislative body. So I urge this committee to pass HB 3216-1 to assist this special group of students. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the good representative? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. We're going to be waiting on the amendments.
Yes, ma'am.
Anyone else want to speak on this House bill?
Joel Fisher.
Pardon?
Joel Fisher.
Okay, Joel. I didn't see the sign-up sheet.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher. On behalf of the Oregon Business Association and Associated Oregon Industries, we'd like to thank Representative Wisnett for his many years dedicated to serving students in poverty. Lots has already been said on this subject today. Poverty is often an indicator of achievement. We say that students in poverty go on to post-secondary education at half the rate of higher income students, and so with that goal of 40-40-20 in mind, we need to do everything that we can to help students in poverty close the achievement cap, meet that goal of 40-40-20. Urge your support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, any questions, Mr. Fisher? Okay, seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3216, and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3340, the one we heard the other day. If Alethea, you could remind us a little bit of what it is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3340 requires the Oregon Department of Education to prepare written materials regarding opportunities to work as an apprentice in the state of Oregon. It requires the Department of Education provide the written materials on apprenticeship programs to public high schools in Oregon, and it requires their distribution of materials when high schools provide higher education information to students. There is a -1 amendment which removes the requirement that the materials provided by the department are in written format and allows for those materials to be an electronic or print form. There is a revenue impact statement. The revenue impact statement is no impact. The fiscal impact statement is minimal fiscal impact. This bill was last heard on March 29th, 2017, and at this time there's no subsequent referrals.
Okay.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the -1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, not seeing any. The amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3340 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, I move House Bill 3340 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No.
You can if you want.
Yes. Rep. Hernandez moves House Bill 3340 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, with none, seeing none, Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And assign a carrier, do we have Representative Hurd? Or?
It was his.
Okay, well, I would like to assign Representative Hurd for that, if he will accept that. Okay, with that, we close the work session on House Bill 3340 and open up a work session on House Bill 3263.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, I want to thank the Chair for allowing me to remove my bill at this time. I always think it's important when you find out that there are some folks that are not happy with some very elementary parts of a bill that you stop and try and take some time to talk about it. And at the very last minute, I had some folks bringing me some information from OEA, from OSBA, and from COSA that were concerned about this bill, even though it has a fiscal light, or even a revenue light, if you were going to look at it that way, but really a fiscal light, that they were still concerned about how this might affect them, depending on what the Board of Education did. So I agreed to pull this bill so we have more time to work on it.
And these are the occupational therapists.
And this is occupational therapists. And I do want to say this, Madam Chair, and that as I have been supportive of trauma rooms, I've been supportive of nurses, I've been supportive of social workers, and I've been supportive of mental and physical well-being of all students in all schools in the state of Oregon. And I want to make sure that OEA, OSBA, and COSA recognize the fact that I am keeping with my promise to make sure that we get as much money to all of the programs that we have today in our schools, understanding that we need to bring up when we see really and truly areas where we have weaknesses in the state of Oregon. It's not appropriate that the state of Washington has 8 times more occupational therapists work in our schools per student than we do in the state of Oregon. And I think that this is something that I've had commitments made now by OEA, OSBA, and COSA that they will work on trying to put together a package of how do we deal with the need for nurses and trauma rooms and for occupational therapists and other folks that are going to help our students be effective, efficient, and successful in our schools. So I want to thank you very much, Madam Chair, for letting me make that statement.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on this? Okay, do I get on? Okay, so with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3263. And we need to, we did not have a public work session on House Bill 3156, so we're going to carry that over for a work session.
Okay.
We'll do that. And I do believe that's it. Okay, anything else? Good. With that, House Education's adjourned. Okay, anything else? Good.